Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Super Bowl is set. Chiefs, Eagles, exactly what everyone wanted. Except the exact opposite. Everyone was hoping for a Super Bowl between the Bills and the Commanders. Or for me personally, like, I was cheering for the Bills. I was cheering for the Commanders. But I always like having a face and a heel, a good guy and a bad guy, if you will. And if it would have been Chiefs and Commanders, well, then the Chiefs are clearly the heel and the Commanders are the good guy in that one. And if it would have been, Bills-Eagles, the Bills, that is the better story. And then, Eagles, whatever, I don't think anyone was super excited about that or them winning. So, this was the fourth, most liked Super Bowl for me that could have happened of the four games. I would have been fine with any of the other three. This is the one because I don't really have a horse in the race in this one, which is never exactly what you want to see. You know, as far as the matchup goes, listen, these two teams played, phenomenal Super Bowl just, a few years ago. And if they can repeat that, we'll all be fine, right? I know people are sick of the Chiefs. I get it. I understand it. I know that, especially from a Packers standpoint with the Eagles knocking out the Packers in the wild card round, not exactly the team that you wanted to see in there, but if they can go out and play a great football game, yeah, whatever. We get Kendrick at halftime and it's still NFL football. Put any two teams in there and I'm still going to watch it. Still going to enjoy it. I know there's a lot of talk of, the controversy in this game, and yes, it very much seemingly goes towards KC more often than not. I mean, two controversial plays primarily, right? And I'm sure there's probably more that people are looking at, but the two ones that most people are pointing to is that fourth down conversion by the Bills and then the, sort of simultaneous catch that happened. The simultaneous catch, I have zero umbrage or issue with. To me, that's, first of all, a play that the Bills need to make in that situation. Secondly, it did feel like a simultaneous catch in this case, and unlike Seattle and Golden Tate, this one actually did feel like a simultaneous catch. And then I know the ball hits the ground. I mean, we've been through this rule on numerous occasions. If the ball doesn't move when it hits the ground and it's in possession, it's a catch. I did not actually have a major issue with that one. The fourth down conversion is a play that happens yearly for sure. And, I would say my bet is that a play like that happens once a week in the NFL, would at least. And what happens or something similar to it is we can all tell, right? If we're just using basic common sense, we can all tell that he got the first down. In this case, Josh Allen got the first down. We all know it. To get conclusive evidence of it is really difficult. And more often than not, they're going to go with the ruling on the field stands. Now, the one ref on one side, the one ref on the other, that's also something that we see all the time. Now, we see what we want to see more often than not. And we all want to see, the league, has it in for the Chiefs. They want, they want the Chiefs to get in, and they love the Chiefs and they help them win and all these things. It's just, it's one of those crappy situations. I enjoy reading a good conspiracy theory. I'm not what I would consider a conspiracy theory guy. Enjoy reading them, and then I just kind of move on right after, and I'm good with that. That's all I kind of need. I'm not a conspiracy theory believer here. I'm not, the league wants the Chiefs to win. They're having plays call, go their way or penalties go their way. I will very readily agree that the Chiefs, more often than not, on the season in totality, have gotten the calls to go their way. I think that has been fairly evident, especially in some primetime games and things like that. No qualm with that observation whatsoever. In this one, I didn't have as big of an issue. Again, the catch to me was fine. I can understand what happened on the fourth and short. To me, the mark was wrong. It should have been placed ahead when it first happened. But I also get, this is a mess of humanity that's happening all at once. And it's really difficult to discern in real time, from 25 yards away, And then when you see it all piled up like that, it's really hard to get, you know, conclusive visual evidence. It sucks. I wish that was not what we were talking about. It was a really, really fun game. A really fun game, back and forth, lived up to the hype, lived up to the expectations. That's really all you could want for in a, you know, AFC championship game like that. Other than, I guess, the outcome maybe being different if you were cheering like I was for the Bills. But I'll say that was a phenomenal football game. And let me just add one more thing as well, right? Like, there was nothing to me, the Saints game where the defender just completely obliterated the player in the playoffs and it was the most clear and obvious pass interference of all time. And that one was like, oh my God, like that is insane. There was nothing quite like that in this one for me. And the other thing that I will add on top of that is embrace it. The NFL does. Like, and what I mean by that is there is going to be controversy and drama and disputed decisions in every game, every big time game. It's just going to happen. Now, if you have a situation like, you know, where Philly just boat races Washington, well, then maybe not so much. But for the most part, any sort of close game, there's going to be a couple calls like that. And it's always going to work that way. And apparently it's going to work that way a little bit more for the Chiefs from time to time. Again, I agree with the observation, but this is just the NFL. This has happened every single playoff run for the entirety of time. And it's even more now with the stakes being as high as they are and the $1 trillion business and the gambling and everything like that being, you know, the daily fantasy sports, everything else. It just takes a whole notch up. I get it. I understand it. But, to me, this was a fantastic and phenomenal game. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Yes, there's controversy. There's always going to be controversy. And I'm sure the NFL is not super concerned or too upset that everyone's going to be talking about those couple plays. Meanwhile, Philly just boat races Washington, you know, a couple big fumbles in that game. And it just goes to show you, you have to take care of the ball. And even if you do, Buffalo, this is the second time they've put up 4 touchdowns and no turnovers in a playoff game against the Chiefs. I saw the stat only 6 times in NFL history where a team with 4, I think maybe it was playoff history. I think it was playoff history. 6 times in NFL history where the playoff team had 4 touchdowns and no turnovers and lost. And Buffalo has 2 of those to KC. But you got to take care of the football. You're just not going to win games when you turn over the ball. We saw that with Washington, just a little bit too sloppy. Philly was clearly the better team. There's no question about it there. And now we'll end up with the Eagles and the Chiefs. Meanwhile, one quick update on the offensive coordinator front. Adam Stenovich, we talked about yesterday, interviewed for the Seattle Seahawks position. That job was filled by Clint Kubiak, so Adam Stenovich will not be going to the Seattle Seahawks. There are still some other offensive coordinator openings. Houston is one, for example. We'll see if Steno gets an interview there. So it's not signed, sealed, and delivered that he's back in Green Bay quite yet. But as of right now, it does seem like he will stay in Green Bay in some capacity until we get other news that maybe he's interviewed for another offensive coordinator opening, if in fact that does happen. If it does happen, we'll go over it at that time and see some potential options that Green Bay could utilize at that offensive coordinator position. But for now, Steno stays in that role. Last but not least, before we get to our main topic, Senior Bowl kicks off this week. Senior Bowl practices. We'll be keeping a close eye on that. Green Bay loves their Senior Bowl prospects. So this is actually a pretty good week to pay attention to a lot of the guys that are attending and practicing and playing in the game, because Green Bay has had a propensity to take guys who have played at the Senior Bowl in the past. So just as a heads up there, kind of keep an extra eye on it. I'm sure we'll recap it at some point later in the week. But for now, just keep an eye on it if you would like, because again, Green Bay usually utilizes that crop of players pretty heavily. All right, let's get to our main topic. And that is one Khalil Mack, who has decided he's going to be returning for another NFL season, who is going to be an unrestricted free agent, or at least is as of now, and is a very intriguing option for your Green Bay Packers. I talked about this on the Devontae Adams episode, and I'll say it again right now. This sort of signing is generally and genuinely not usually my cup of tea. Now, if you are right there, like Super Bowl contender, or you're in that win now mode, Super Bowl or bust sort of situation, well, then yeah, I think you're probably a little bit more inclined to maybe make a move like this if it can put you over the top. If you're going to sign a Khalil Mack older in age at this stage of his career, especially if it's like to a 1-year deal, well, then you better be making that run towards the Super Bowl, or you just paid, you know, a huge contract on a 1-year deal for an aging player and will have nothing to show for it in future seasons other than maybe some dead cap hit if you put those void years in there. So this is not generally my cup of tea. Don't like doing these moves. It's not the same for Khalil Mack. And I'm going to go over why in great detail today. Let's go over, as we've been doing with these free agent options, why it would make sense for Green Bay. Number one, they need a premium pass rusher. And yes, Khalil Mack is still a premium pass rusher. Do not box score scout this one. If anyone's in my mentions or in my comments below, only six out, go watch the film. Go watch the film. He is still a premium pass rusher in this league. And we'll go through that today. And Green Bay needs one. I also believe that this is sort of the perfect fit for Khalil Mack at this stage of his career. You don't necessarily want Khalil Mack at this stage of his career to go out there and play 1,000 snaps. You probably want him closer to 600 to 700 snaps at this point, and maybe 800. And with Green Bay, you have a defensive end group that includes Rashawn Gary, LVN, Kingsley Enagbare, and Brenton Cox. You're not in this situation where you completely need him to be a every down player no matter what, especially with the way that Rashawn Gary and LVN took big steps as run defenders this past season. You can kind of utilize them a little bit on earlier downs. And quite frankly, you know, you're still going to want Rashawn out there a bunch on passing downs, but even if it's Brenton Cox and LVN a lot more on early run downs, and you kind of have those guys focus a little bit more on run defense, and then pass rush time is a little bit more Rashawn Gary, Khalil Mack, you could absolutely do that. But he would not come here and needing to be in a position where he has to play on every single down. It would give Green Bay a playmaker on all three levels. It would give them Khalil Mack up front. It would give them Edgerrin Cooper at linebacker, and it would give them Xavier McKinney on the back end. All three levels of the defense would have a real legitimate playmaker. And yes, I'm putting Edgerrin Cooper already in that playmaker category. I actually also believe his presence on that defensive line would make everyone better. I think his effort, his intensity, his physicality is going to rub off on that room in a very positive way. And I just think if all of a sudden, instead of that attention going to Rashawn Gary, instead of that attention going to Kenny Clark, that attention goes to Khalil Mack, guess what? That's going to make Rashawn Gary better. That's going to make Kenny Clark better. Devontae Wyatt should be better. Like, everyone else is going to get a little bit of a rub because they're paying a little bit more close attention to Khalil Mack, especially on some key downs. And by the way, even when he is in those situations, he is still finding ways to make plays, even if chipped, double teamed, etc. He's just that sort of dude. And it would give Jeff Hafley a ton of flexibility and options for what he could do along that defensive line, or more importantly, just with what play calls he can do. I think it gives you more confidence, even though we saw a lot of four-man rushes from Hafley this past season. It gives him probably even more confidence that he can run those with Khalil Mack up there, and just opens up more options, more opportunities in that playbook, and more designs that he can run because he has a big-time pass rusher up front that's going to be very disruptive. And again, I think that's going to be a very good thing for Hafley. So there's a lot of reasons that this type of deal would make sense for Green Bay. Why it would make sense for Khalil Mack? Well, you're going to a playoff contender. That certainly helps. I do think he's a great fit within Jeff Hafley's defense. And then again, as we kind of talked about yesterday with Rasul, this all comes down to dollars and cents, right? If Green Bay is willing to give him the best available contract, well, then he's going to be very motivated to go to Green Bay. And if Green Bay is not willing to give him the top contract on the market, then he's probably not going to be super motivated to go to Green Bay. But I do think he's going to have some of those, you know, other aspects that I'm sure he's looking for, including, again, a winning team, somebody that's competing, and maybe a team that is a player or two away. And I'm sure Khalil Mack would feel like he could be one of those players that helps them reach that destination. Patrick Mahomes and KC, Saquon Barkley in Philly, we have our championship matchup all set. Who's going to bring home the Lombardi? Will KC three-peat? Will Saquon run wild? Either way, you absolutely cannot miss out on the last football game of the season with Prize Picks, the best place to win cash while watching the big game. And here's the big thing. Prize Picks is giving away a free pick where one of the starting quarterbacks will only need to throw for 1 yard to win. If you're correct on at least one other stat projection, you can win real cash. And that's not even all. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. And don't forget that Prize Picks doesn't end with football season either. Think LeBron will have more than 39.5 points, rebounds, and assists? Think Donovan Mitchell will score more than 20.5 points? Prize Picks is the best place to win real money all year long. This week, I'm going to keep an eye on Giannis in Milwaukee, Steph for Golden State, and I'm going to look for Mikko Rantanen to make an impact with his new team following that huge blockbuster hockey trade. And don't forget to download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code Packaday to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game. From a contract standpoint, it's a little bit all over the place. Now, PFF has him as their fifth available free agent. Spotrac. Oh, Spotrac, you beautiful animal. They had him, this is like legitimately hilarious. His contract valuation for this offseason per Spotrac is 1 year, $6 million. Friends, if Green Bay could get Khalil Mack for 1 year, $6 million, I don't even know what I will do. I will do a one-chip challenge. I will do a polar plunge. I will do a one-chip challenge into a polar plunge, and I will somehow find a way to do a swanton bomb while doing both of those at the same time. If he gets a one-year, $6 million deal and comes to Green Bay, I don't even know. You tell me. What do you want me to do? I'll do it. Like, I don't even care at this point. I will find a way to do something, the most ridiculous thing ever, and then up it by like 20. There is 0.0% chance that Khalil Mack is signing anywhere for 1 year, $6 million. And then if it's in Green Bay, even the icing on the cake. But it's the most ridiculous statement ever. I don't know if they meant to put a one in front of that, like 1 year, $16 million. But take that one aside. I saw a couple writers online that were writing about it. They were kind of thinking 13 to 15 mil on a one-year deal. PFF, in their evaluation, has him at 2 years, $45 million with $40 million guaranteed. Now, I think that is a little bit too on the aggressive side. My personal guess is he's probably in a one-year 16 to 22 million sort of range. I think it's probably closer to that 20 to 22. Wouldn't shock me if he got 24, 25. I think that's possible on a one-year deal. It could be 2 years or maybe a year and then a void year, a few void years, but basically what would amount to a one-year deal. Khalil Mack was already kind of wondering if he was going to come back this season. So I think he probably signs a one-year deal with the team. And I think, again, probably closer to that 18 to 24 million, maybe 16, maybe 15. But I think it's going to be on the higher end, especially, again, when he's the fifth highest rated player on the market per PFF. And I'm right there. I think he's going to be extremely sought after despite his age. And I think he's going to be somebody that some team is willing to give a very big contract to. So I think that is worth noting here as we're looking at whether or not Khalil Mack will be an option for Green Bay, but somewhere in that range is what we're looking at here. Statistically, this past year, Khalil Mack played in 16 games, not including the playoffs, had 16 starts, 39 tackles, 6 sacks, 9 pass breakups or pass defense, passes batted down, etc. 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, 6 tackles for loss, 15 quarterback hits. That's like the official statistics. He also had 1 start in the playoffs, 6 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits, and 2 sacks in that playoff game against Houston. Now, per PFF, stats are a little bit different. They track it a little bit of a different way. I actually think, regardless, like take the grades away from PFF, regardless of what you think about grades, their tracking and statistic stuff is phenomenal. Like, that's not really debatable. When you hear PFF say all 32 teams utilize them, it's for this stuff. It's for their statistical tracking, which they are phenomenal at. They give him 27 tackles, 52 pressures, which included 9 sacks. Remember, they take half sacks and count them as full sacks. 8 hits, 35 hurries, and 6 batted passes. So he was definitely still a big-time impact player. If you care about those grades, PFF gave him a 90.2 PFF grade. The only Packer who had a grade higher than that was, of course, Josh Jacobs with a 92.3. He had an 87.7 run defense grade, a 47.2 tackling grade, we'll talk about that, a 78.9 pass rush grade, and an 80.3 coverage grade. Again, a 90.2 overall. He was their fifth highest graded edge rusher, behind only Aiden Hutchinson, Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, and Nick Bosa. He was ahead of Micah Parsons. He was ahead of Jared Verse, Rookie of the Year, ahead of Will Anderson, well ahead of Max Crosby, ahead of Rashawn Gary, ahead of a variety of different edge rushers, number 5 on their list of best edge defenders this season. That's where he was at. All right, let's get into our scouting report, because I'm excited to dig into this one with you guys and go over everything that I saw on tape. Now, yes, we need to be aware that he will be 34 years old in February. When we get to our negatives, we'll talk about that, but we're going to start with the positives. He has raw, pure power and a phenomenal bull rush. He turned on the tape right away going against Colton Miller in Vegas, and he just bull rushes him into oblivion, immediate sack. I think it was Gardner Minshew who was playing quarterback, and it just immediately showed it off and showed that on numerous occasions. He plays with physicality. He plays with violence. He has strong hands, a violent punch, a great long arm. Like, he will come at you relentlessly with physicality and with intensity. Sets a very physical edge. That's where that great run defense grade comes from. Good luck. I saw him split double teams, hold up against double teams. If it's a one-on-one, anything like that, he's normally just going to set a very physical, very good edge. He's a very good run defender. So while we talked about maybe you could utilize him as a pass rusher, you don't necessarily want to take him off the field on early downs either, because he is a very, very good run defender as well. He brings a beautiful chaos to the game. When you have this type of player who's constantly making an impact and constantly doing his job, there is a beautiful chaos to it. And I guess maybe that's the wrong way to define it, because chaos seems unplanned, or like in general is unplanned, and or it can be like kind of good or bad. That's not what I mean by it. It's just he's constantly causing problems. That's probably a better way to put it. So it's chaos for the offense. Chaos for the offense, not chaos for the defense or chaos for himself, but it's constantly causing chaos for the offense. And it's a beautiful thing to watch, because he's consistently and constantly disruptive. He's an impact player, like we talked about, which would give an impact player, like I said, on all three levels. An unbelievable love for the game. Like, you can just tell that you're just not that good and not giving that much effort at this point of your career if you don't just have a pure, unadulterated love for football. And it's contagious. You can tell it. Like you can see it oozing off the tape. He's one of those guys that when I've talked about the attention to detail, the guys that you can just tell love it, practice it, breathe it. I've talked about David Bakhtiari, Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, certainly in that conversation, like just guys that do it so well. And you can just tell the artistry that's in their craft. He has it. It jumps off the tape. It's really special to watch. And like these are the things that like I love doing, because, you know, during the course of a season or even most like off seasons, I don't get to just go and turn on Khalil Mack tape very often or like almost ever. And just getting to put him on and watch him even at this stage of his career was a ton of fun. Just an unbelievable player. Change of direction. My God, dude, like 33 years old. And this guy, I posted a video of it on Twitter if you want to go see it, is planting in the ground and bending and turning on like a dime. Like, if I'm watching a college player do that, like it's just like almost like a first round evaluation. To be physical at the point of attack, get low, bend around, change direction and go towards the play. That's something at 22, 23, 24, 25 is special. At age 33, it's not fair. It's legitimately not fair. I saw that. That was like the first thing one of the first things that just made me like, I needed a moment. I'm like, what? How? I don't understand it. It's just a really, really special dude. Like the change of direction at that point in time. There's a play where Lamar has it on a read option. I posted this one as well. Lamar's a read option. He keeps it. And Khalil Mack just like follows him the entire way. And then, of course, Lamar tries to juke him. Khalil Mack's there. He's running step for step. And now it's not like Lamar's up to full speed or whatever. But can you, I mean, remember the days of Colin Kaepernick just running around Packers defenders? Like Lamar Jackson against a 33-year-old defensive end in the open field. Name another player that even remotely survives that. Survives it. And Khalil Mack made a play for like a 4-yard loss in the backfield. Like that's Khalil Mack still. At this point in time, the change of direction's ridiculous. I still think he has good burst, especially off the line of scrimmage, and has the ability to convert speed to power. He can stand up or play with his hand in the dirt equally. I saw some people say, "Well, he's a 3-4, edge." No, his hands in the dirt. A lot of his best plays were hand in the dirt. If you just constantly put his hand in the dirt, there's no issue there whatsoever. In fact, I would argue that he is a better 4-3 hand in the dirt dude at this point in his career than a stand-up dude, because we'll talk about one of the negatives is, you know, he's not a drop in coverage guy anymore. So it doesn't really matter if he's standing up, just get him rushing the quarterback. And by the way, with Jeff Hafley, especially on a pass rush down, he usually will give players leeway. When you want to stand up, you're rushing the pass. I don't care. You know, go get after the quarterback, whatever you feel more comfortable with. So we definitely saw at times people standing up in Jeff Hafley's defense this past year, but he is equally as talented hand in the dirt or standing up. And like I said, I think he's actually a little bit better hand in the dirt at this, or it makes more sense hand in the dirt at this point of his career. Leads by example out on the field, tons of vet savvy tricks of the trade sort of plays. You just tell he can read things, knows exactly what they're going to do, where they're going to go, and then how to beat it. Like I said, a variety of pass rush moves at his disposal, long arm, spin move, jab step, counter, or like a almost like a Euro step, a speed move inside, a speed move outside, again, converting speed to power. Like, he's got everything. He's got all the tricks of the trade. Super talented, you know, just veteran savvy kind of guy. Can win with speed or power. So he can win with both. Again, at this stage of his career, which is ridiculous. Multiple batted passes. I mean, I think, what did PFF have him at? 9, I think it was. So PFF had 6 batted passes. The overall statistics had him with 9. I think it felt closer to 9. And not only that, not only was he getting his hands on the ball, he was deflecting them. And there was at least one interception, if not 2 interceptions, based on Khalil Mack batting a ball up and getting a teammate an interception because of it. So he's really, really good at that. High football IQ, can play on the left side or the right side. So he can play either side. It's not like one of these pass rushers where he has to be on the left side or has to be on the right. He can play either of them just as effectively. Twists and stunts, very good with both of those. You cannot block him with tight ends or running backs or leave him unblocked on a play and think you can just, like, you know, that he's going to have to read and he's not going to be able to, like, no, you can't not block him. He's going to make the play. You block him with a running back or tight end, he's going to make the play. So good luck with that. It's not going to work. He's going to get by those guys. He's had 1 penalty in 2 years. 1 penalty in 2 years. Pretty impressive. And here's the other thing. A lot of the talk in the comments, I'm sure, and certainly the ones that are just clicking on the video and commenting without actually listening to said video. Yeah, I see you guys when that happens. A lot of the comments are going to be about how he's turning 34 years old. Understandably so. I get it. I really, really do. Like I said, normally not my cup of tea. I dare you to go watch him and look anyone in the eye. Go tell Khalil Mack this, but look anyone in the eye and tell him that he looks remotely like he's 34. I swear to you, I'm not just saying this. If you were to do like a blind tape test, not a blind taste test, a blind tape test, and you couldn't tell who the player was or how many years they played in their career or anything like that, and just watched it, man, I would swear that dude was 26, 27 years old. I would be willing to bet. And if you would have told me he's almost 34, never would have believed you. Never, ever, ever would have believed you. He plays way younger, way more spry, way more athletic than any 34-year-old that I have seen at this position. Age is a big issue, and we'll get into the negatives with that. Here's the thing. He played 668 snaps this past season, missed basically 2 games. That was the second fewest snaps that he's played in his career. He got injured in a game, played 4 snaps in that game, missed the remainder of it, and then missed the next game and then came back. That was all, but only 668 snaps. You're basically dealing, some extent here, with a ticking time bomb. At some point, Khalil Mack will cease to become that version of Khalil Mack. Maybe it's in 2025. Maybe it's in 2026. Maybe it's in 2028. We've seen crazier things. I don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to probably be soon, and he's probably not going to be the same player that he was this past year. At some point in the next few seasons, maybe as early as this season, he showed 0 signs of slowing down. And I mean 0 signs, all the way to the Texans game where in the playoffs he had 2 sacks and played fantastic in that game. I don't see it at this point in time. But when that happens, because it will happen, I don't know. And you don't know. And, you know, Goody doesn't know. The Chargers don't know. Khalil Mack doesn't know. We don't know when that day is going to come. But when you hit age 34, I do know, and you know, and we know, and we all know that it's going to be here sooner rather than later. So you are playing a little bit of free agent roulette if you go in this direction, and you're hoping that it comes up that he is the same guy that he was last year, at least close to it. But you just never know. You get that wear and tear, you start to break down a little bit more, maybe a few more injuries, or, you know, maybe just again, a step slower, which changes your game, or a step not as strong, maybe changes your game. We don't know when that's going to happen, but it will happen. It will happen soon, and it could happen in 2025. Here's the other thing. If you give him a $20 million deal, 1 year, 20 mil, right? And he plays 668 snaps like he did a season ago, that's 30,000 per snap. Think about that. 30K per snap. At 20 mil for 668 snaps, you're paying him 30K for every single snap that he plays. So the ROI on those snaps better be really freaking good, because you're just draining money every single time, you know, right? And again, obviously if he plays more, that rate goes down, but it's a lot of money on a 1 year deal for, again, a 34-year-old that is last year played 668 snaps. Finishing was an issue when you saw that tackling grade. I want to rephrase that. It wasn't an issue. If he finished a bit better, he would have had a maybe 16 sack season instead of a 6 sack season. So there were a couple, in run defense was the same thing. Could have probably had like 5, 6, 7 more tackles for loss, maybe even more than that. And it was sort of odd. It wasn't like these were dead to rights plays that Mac was missing. They were plays where he would make a ridiculous play to get into the backfield, either as a pass rusher, as a run defender. And then like the player would like kind of change direction at the last moment to avoid Khalil Mack. And he would kind of get like a hand on him, but couldn't completely get him to the ground. That happened quite a bit. So I do think there, you know, if there was just a little bit better finishing, you're talking about a player that's probably getting $28 million this offseason. But that was one thing that was a little bit off. And hopefully it just bounces back to some extent. Because again, could have probably had 15, 16 sacks and probably 8 more tackles for loss. Yeah, that's maybe a little bit aggressive, but you get my point. There were some plays there that he could have made that he didn't. And just that finishing would go a long way into making him even more of an impact player, which is kind of crazy to think about. Not a coverage guy anymore. We talked about that. Not somebody that you want to drop into coverage. But if you're picking up this guy, that's not what you're hoping he does anyway. And you can do it. You know, like he can, you know, 15, 20 snaps per game. Or no, don't do it per game. 15 to 20, you know, snaps per season, drop him back into coverage. No big deal. He can definitely handle that. But he's not somebody that you're going to want to do or, you know, make any habit out of dropping in coverage. But again, 4-3 defensive end, you don't need that quite as much from time to time, sure. But you don't need it to be Khalil Mack. And again, that's not what you are bringing him in for. So then the big question remains, should Green Bay take a stab at him? Should they legitimately give him a shot and look, you know, look him up and say, yeah, we want to make you the top offer at this position? Here's the thing that I talked about with Devontae. I do not believe that there is a great option. We'll go through some more coming up this week. I don't believe there's a great 1A option that's out there that makes all the sense like Xavier McKinney did. I don't think there's that player that you want to put a huge contract into. And for that, if there was, I would say just go do that. Like that probably makes more sense. But because there isn't that player out there, I think you have to get a bit more creative. And giving somebody like a Khalil Mack, who I think would be an unbelievable add to this team, a 1 year, let's just say it's 20 mil, a 1 year, $20 million deal, and bringing him in for that season. And if it, you know, even if it doesn't work out, right, it's not like you're putting, you know, 5 years, 150 into somebody, or even 4 years, 80 million with like 60 or 50, 40, 30 million guaranteed, whatever it is. It's not like you're doing something like that. So 1 year, 20 mil, you get to play out the season, hopefully make a run. And then next year you have are free of that money. You're not carrying it over or anything like that. And you can theoretically go sign another big free agent that you would have, you know, if you would have signed a 4 year, 80 mil at 20 mil per year, right? If you were willing to do that and you just signed a 1 year, 20 this year, well, next year you've got 3 years, 60 million out there to sign somebody left over because you didn't give that 4 year, 20 million per year contract to somebody this year. So I don't hate it. Again, generally not my cup of tea, but I can understand why this would make a ton of sense for Green Bay. He fits exactly what they need. And yes, it's a bit of a gamble at his age. Guess what? Everything is. Every free agent signing, every player that you bring in. And there's probably a little bit more of a gamble when, again, somebody's turning 34 years old. But I look at him on tape. I see no signs of slowing down. He's exactly what Green Bay needs. He's a perfect fit. And he's one of these sort of freak studs that's been great throughout his career, that's just been different. He's an elite dude. And when you are that, you usually last a little bit longer. And we've seen this. And first thing that we should note here too, as we get to kind of our final verdict here, Goody tried to trade for Khalil Mack previously. This is a player he loved in the past. And if you look at his grades, if you look at his tape, he hasn't really slowed down since then. So now he's a free agent and you've got the money to go and spend. This would not shock me if Goody went out and tried to make this deal. And here's the thing. He knows the impact that these type of players have made for this franchise in the past, whether it be Reggie White, Charles Woodson, Julius Peppers. But yeah, Andy, he's 34 years old. It's different. Julius Peppers signed at age 34, had three very productive years in Green Bay, then played two more seasons after that. But those 3 years, starting at age 34 for Julius, well, but Julius Peppers is different. He's an elite player. Hello? Same thing with Khalil Mack. Same thing with Khalil Mack. They did it 34 years with Julius Peppers. I think you can do the exact same thing. And you don't even need a 3-year deal at this point. Probably just get him for a 1-year deal. They signed Charles Woodson at age 30. But yeah, it's different. He was 30 years old. I would argue a couple things. Number one, that I would probably rather have, again, a 34-year-old defensive end on a 1-year deal than a 30-year-old defensive back on a longer-term deal. That's usually like the defensive backs age quicker. So that is actually probably more aggressive, signing Woodson to a long-term deal at age 30. And now it turned out great, but then signing Mack to a 1-year deal at age 34. Woodson played 10 more years. He played 10 more seasons after they signed him at age 30. Reggie White. Again, not everyone's a Reggie White. I get that. I understand that. But Khalil Mack is, he's not Reggie White, but he's not like he's leagues away, right? Reggie White was age 32 when Green Bay picked him up. And that was back in the day. We're talking 92. It was a little bit different. The longevity was a little bit different back then. He played 6 more years, then took a year off, and then played that year in Carolina after that. So again, he played for some really good football after that point. I do not think that this is just some crazy pipe dream. I do not think that this is something that Goody would not entertain. I am not telling you to hold your breath. I'm not saying that it is super likely, but I do think that this is something that Green Bay should look at. And I'm hopeful that Green Bay will look at it. And if it were me, I would be all over this. I think you can actually make an argument that this is kind of the guy. Like if you're looking to add a big time impact player to this team with a sense of urgency and a win now, getting a veteran like Khalil Mack, who's going to set the tone up front, bring a totally different atmosphere to that defensive front, which was arguably maybe the most disappointing aspect of your entire defense and maybe even entire team this past year, adding him will make a big time impact on this team. And I think you can even go from a top 6 or 7 defense. I think he can help you become a top 2, 3, maybe even number 1 defense. And that will go a long way in helping you have that urgency in trying to win a Super Bowl this upcoming season. So yes, I am 100% all in. And I 100% would make a run at Khalil Mack this offseason. Let me know what you think. Are you in? Are you out? Were you in before the episode and now you're out? Were you out before the episode and now you're in? Were you out and you're out? You're in, you're in. Whatever you were, I would love to hear from you guys. Let me know what you think. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. We appreciate that a ton. Check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. Speaking of which, shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Hanel, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Itaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Pat Scott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, and Ian Ewing. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go!